It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today is the day for our annual holiday book show. We're going to get recommendations for the best new books for grown-ups from independent booksellers in Iowa today. Tomorrow, we'll talk about books for the young readers in your life. And here with me in the studio, Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Hello, Jan.
Hello, Charity.
And hello, Paul.
Hi.
And joining us for the first time on the show, Mary Rourke Watson from Plot Twist Bookstore in Ankeny. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Charity.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And I want to start off the hour with some fiction picks. You've all got a huge variety of picks, fiction, nonfiction, a little poetry mixed in, so we'll make our way through the hour. But let's start with fiction. And Jan, why don't you go first with your first pick?
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about Margot Livesey's new book, Mercury, which is sort of a page-turner. It's both a domestic, psychological domestic novel and something of a thriller. It's set in a Boston suburb. The protagonists are a married couple in their, they're probably around 40. They have two kids. They seem to have a pretty good marriage. He's an optometrist who is a native Scotsman. As is Margot herself, and she is a Yale-educated financial wizard, has a career in economics, and wants to quit her job and start a stable with her horse stable with her childhood best friend. So her husband agrees to that, and doesn't notice that their marriage is suddenly sliding away.
Falling apart. All
right. And it's partly because she's so obsessed with this horse. Mm-hmm. And it's very good horse riding, and I realized when I was putting my list together, I've got a little horse theme going here today. without necessarily being the biggest horse person myself.
Although there are many, many horse people out there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I rode as a child, as a young girl.
So maybe the love still
So maybe
remains.
It's coming back, sort of like Margot's
so is,
character.
Is Mercury the name of the horse?
Mercury is the name of the horse.
All right.
Yes.
All right. So Mercury, Margot Livesey?
I think it's pronounced Livesey.
Livesey. All right. And Mary, we're going to go to you next for your first pick with a fiction book.
Okay. I chose a local writer because one of the things I like to do at my store is to support local writers. So I thought it was fun to put this one on the list. I chose Michelle Slicker's Come This Way. She's a local writer, and she consistently writes wonderful stories that resonate with our customers. This book follows the lives of three women. It's an emotional story as they find their way through relationships and circumstances with strength. There's a mother and a daughter. There's a woman that is retired and is trying to find her way through things. So I thought it was a very good story to introduce for the holidays because we're all interested in relationships and we're all gathering around a table or around a tree and there's all this backstory and it just sort of walks through these relationships and brings them up to a nice conclusion that I think readers really appreciate. Nice.
What's the title again?
Come This Way.
Okay.
By Michelle
Slicker.
Slicker. All right. Come This Way. Sounds like a really good read. It makes me think it's probably going to make me cry. Am I right about that?
There could be some crying involved.
All right. Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Paul, let's go to you with your first fiction pick.
Well, the first book I have is called News of the World by Paulette Giles. That's J-I-L-E-S. And she's a historical novelist. And for booksellers out there, this is one of those easy-to-sell books because it's so interesting, basically. The main character is named Captain Kidd, and he's not a pirate. He's been a general in three American wars, and it's after the Civil War that this takes place. And he has to have a job, you know. He didn't have a lot of Social Security in those days. And he goes west. He goes to Texas and carries tons of newspapers from the east, and he goes from town to town, and these towns have no way of getting any news at all. And so he sets himself up and for money reads the New York Times, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and these people, you know, are hearing for the first time that there's been a volcano in Mexico, you know, that the Irish are coming into New York. And they are enormously popular, although they don't pay that well. And so it starts out in Wichita Falls, Texas, and he's doing his regular deal, and somebody offers him $50, which is a lot, to take a girl who had been kidnapped by the Indians south to her parents in San Antonio. And that's sort of the second half of the book, and it's a wonderful journey, and sometimes it's pretty scary, and frequently it's funny. This is one of the wonderful things about this book. Paulette Giles wrote a book called Enemy Women, which was great, and it's nominated for the National Book Award, or was until it lost.
Right.
Win a few, lose a few.
Right.
When we get five in, I sometimes can sell them that day.
Wow. Well, and it's not a very fat book. So
no,
a quick, fun read.
It is about 209 pages, and it is absolutely packed with history and with the details that history has for us.
That sounds like a lot of fun. All right, News of the World by Paulette Giles, and that sounds like it should be on a lot of wish lists this holiday season. Jan, what's your next pick?
Well, I have one that is also packed with history, but it is not funny. Actually, even in the darkest books, there's always humor, and possibly the best humor. But,
right.
But it's called The Sport of Kings by C.E. Morgan, and it is 545 pages, I would say. It is
not a quick read.
No, and not for the faint of heart. It is about horse breeding and racing, but it's also about race in America. It features both a black jockey and a half black groom, and a family that are sort of, you know, wealthy Americans that originally came from Virginia through the Cumberland Gap and settled Kentucky and became, you know, wealthy and slave owners, obviously, and then sort of focuses in the moves sort of between the 1950s and the 1980s or 2000, and the main character is Henry Forge, who decides he's the one that decides that he's going to be a horse breeder instead of a tobacco farmer. So he takes this, you know, this great land that he's inherited and turns it into there's a long section that's set in Cincinnati, sort of, if you've seen the movie Moonlight, it's sort of reminiscent of that, where this boy who then becomes a man who's half Irish and half black is living with his single mother who gets sicker and sicker, and then he gets into drugs and ends up in jail, but luckily in jail, well, luck actually doesn't play much of a part in this book, but in jail he does get some training in grooming, and he ends up on the farm in Kentucky with
these disparate lives come together.
They do, yeah. And but this is an incredibly well-written book. I mean, this woman is she was raised in Kentucky herself. She went to Berea College, which is the free tuition college for bright Appalachian students, and then she got a degree at Harvard Divinity School. It's her second novel. You'll hear echoes of Melville, Faulkner,
wow.
Shakespeare, Cormac McCarthy. Incredible book.
All right. So not a quick fun read, but
but important.
Something that you can really dig into and learn a lot and have a lot of experiences with that book.
That's right.
Sport of Kings by C.E. Morgan is the book. And Mary, that brings us back around to you. Another fiction pick.
Okay, another fiction pick. I chose Jane and the 12 Days of Christmas by Stephanie Barron. I'm a huge Jane Austen fan, and the fun thing about this is that Jane Austen is a detective throughout this series, and it's all set in Regency England, and she's actually still an author. She's writing. This book is set about the time that Manchester Park has been published. It's Christmas Eve. It's 1814, and Jane has been invited to spend the holiday with family and friends at the Vine, V-Y-N-E, the gorgeous ancestral home of the wealthy and politically prominent Chute family. Jane, however, discovers holiday cheer is fleeting. One of the Yuletide revelers dies in a tragic accident, which immediately Jane discovers is suspicious. So we get to go through. And again, it's a great read
Austen fans. The killer is among them, right?
Among them, yes.
Yeah, classic. Gosford Park kind of.
Right, exactly.
The murder at the manor house. All right.
I get the Christie sort of right, exactly.
Nice. That's Jane and the 12 Days of Christmas by Stephanie Barron. Some murder mystery holiday cheer. All right, Paul, quick pick from you.
Okay. Night of the Animals by Bill Brune, B-R-O-U-N. They always tell you how to pronounce it whenever it's written. It is 2052. The main character is a little bit crazy, and he is a huge guy who has huge hands, and he's very awkward, and he is in love with animals, and his grandmother tells him, "You have the wonderments." And it goes back and forth in time to various parts of England, where English sort of folk culture.
Oh.
And
all right, Paul, we're going to have to take a break. We'll finish talking about Night of the Animals by Bill Brune in just a second. It's our holiday book show on Talk of Iowa. We'll continue with our best picks in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our holiday book show on Talk of Iowa. We're talking about the best new books, fiction, nonfiction, poetry for grown-ups this hour. And we're getting recommendations from some of Iowa's independent booksellers. With me, Mary Rourke Watson from Plot Twist Bookstore in Ankeny, Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, and Paul Ingram, also of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And Paul, you were on your second fiction pick just a moment ago, and I had to interrupt you. It's Night of the Animals by Bill Brune. And this is it's set in the future, in 2052.
And to sum it up quickly, it's a redoing of Noah's Ark, and the main character, Cuthbert Handley, there are a bunch of people, sort of crazies, who are committing suicide wildly all over the world. This takes place in London. And they also believe there are very few animals left, and they want to kill the rest of them.
Oh.
And Bill Brune decides to free the animals in the London Zoo, the last animals. And I just can't tell you how wonderful this book is, how the characters blend and mesh. Cuthbert has an Indian psychiatrist who is, if I haven't told you already, Cuthbert is a bit off his rocker, but that adds a great deal to it. And it's a funny, touching, and just, if you think you don't like science fiction, you should try this. This might be a good entry.
Okay. No space marines, but
yeah, right.
Certainly a vision of the future. All right, that's Night of the Animals by Bill Brune, B-R-O-U-N. And Jan, back to you.
I think I'm going to do Commonwealth by Ann Patchett. I was going to maybe also go for something a little lighter than the last time. And it's probably her most autobiographical novel. And she is, you know, if you've read her nonfiction, she is the daughter of a policeman. Her father was in the LAPD. And this character is born to a policeman in L.A., but her parents quickly split up when her mother is kissed by a lawyer at her christening party. And so she ends up in Virginia with this mixed family, the narrator, of siblings, and somewhere in the 1970s when this pack of six siblings is left to their own devices by the parents who are still in love with each other. A dramatic thing happens, and I won't give that away.
All right.
And the rest of the novel sort of circles around. She's in her, you know, still a kid when this happens, maybe sixth grade or something like that. And so the novel then circles around this incident, this pretty extreme incident in the life of this girl. And so you flip forward in time to when her father is actually dying, and it's kind of beautiful scenes with the end of his life in L.A., and back to when she is a writer at a famous school, which will remain unnamed, and then ends up in Chicago as a waitress.
So and a famous Midwestern school?
A famous yes. Midwestern
All right,
school.
Nice.
And marries an older professor who then uses her life story in a novel.
Oh. She writes relationships so well. I can imagine that she can really suck you into this.
It's a pretty quick read, and it's pretty much fun.
All right. Commonwealth by Ann Patchett. And that brings us back to you, Mary.
I'm going to go with Marie Benedict's The Other Einstein. I always enjoy learning about the people that accompany famous people, usually wives or family. And this one is a speculative fiction on whether Mitzi Merrick, who was Albert Einstein's wife, contributed more to his science and research than people. You know, it's one of those things where people think she did, and then people think she didn't. And that what's interesting is that she and Albert Einstein had a very tumultuous relationship. So you get some of the backstory there. They had a child that was before they were married, and that child sort of disappeared. And did that child die, or did that child get adopted? No one really knows. And then they were married for a short time and had two sons, and then divorced. And then after that, she, despite having gone to a famous institute and had studied, she just really never became her own person in the science world. But this really interesting. It's very well written. I think Marie Benedict did a marvelous job writing this, just capturing the spirit of this young woman and the other young women at the institute and the difficulties they had as they were trying to make their way through what was still a very male-oriented, world in physics and science. And but it's really interesting to think about how much these two contributed to each other and to the science world.
Very interesting. All right, The Other Einstein, Marie Benedict. So historical fiction, but biographical fiction, and obviously not necessarily based on truth, but sounds like a rich imagining of what might have happened.
Yes.
All right, Paul, back to you.
Okay. I've got Ian McEwan's Nutshell. And Ian McEwan writes two kinds of books, one sort of large, personal, they're usually his high-end novels, like Atonement. And this is one of his funny, lighter novels. And it's told by a fetus in a mother's womb. And the mother is having a relationship with her husband's brother. And he has great command of language. this fetus does because he listens to all the talk shows.
So very sophisticated fetus.
Yes, right. He's a very sophisticated fetus, and he is always making these horrible wisecracks. And he doesn't like his, you know, he loves his mom, but he really roots for his dad. And he sometimes tries to give her a good kick in the stomach, but that is usually expected. And that doesn't give him the power that he would really like to have. It's very short, 200 pages.
9 months.
9 months. It is a 9 month. And it is... It is just so much fun.
Oh,
this,
wow!
It's a load of laughs.
All right, Nutshell by Ian McEwan. That's maybe the most original idea for a book I've heard in quite a while.
Yeah.
All right, Jan, you're up next.
So I have Swing Time. I have Zadie Smith's new book that's been getting a ton of attention. That is about many things. It's about
Number one book on my wish list this Christmas. If anybody's shopping for me, so
well.
So tell us about it.
Well, it starts in London, and she's great at London, and the narrator is the daughter of, again, a white sort of derelict man and a black mother who's very smart but not particularly good at supporting her. Yes. And she has a friend, and they decide that they're going to be dancers. Now, the narrator is not a particularly coordinated human being. Nevertheless, she loves dance, and so you've got this kind of, you know, this kind of drama going with these adolescent girls, and then suddenly it switches to 15, 20 years later, when the narrator is working for a superstar, and the superstar decides that she wants to start a philanthropic organization in West Africa. And so it moves back and forth in time and place between West Africa and London, and all throughout the novel, swing is the metaphor. Fred Astaire, and it's a really wonderful novel. It's complicated. It's more complicated, less funny than White Teeth, but it's an amazing book.
Nice. All right. Swing Time by Zadie Smith, which has been getting a lot of attention. Sounds like deservedly so. And Mary, that brings us back to you.
Okay. I've chosen another historical fiction novel because these are the ones I really enjoy. So this one is Victoria by Daisy Goodwin. She also created and wrote the Masterpiece Theater production that people can watch. So this is sort of the novel that goes with that production. And again, it's about Queen Victoria, and it just sort of walks through her coronation and the way that she begins to own her position in the British royalty. And I think that's a topic that never really gets old for me. I mean, there's just so many rich stories there. So this, you know, she wakes up one morning and discovers that she's queen, and then she's so young and she's so frail, and she's been hidden away in Kensington Palace, and everybody wants a piece of that power, you know, from anybody that can get their hands on it. And they soon discover that this frail young woman has quite a mind of her own and has quite a spirit and a very definite idea about how she's going to rule. And I think people will really enjoy this particular version of this history, and because it takes a look at her rise to power, and just an enjoyable look at her owning her her position and her power, and sort of working through all the politics and intrigue.
How long is it?
I don't have the. It's a fairly solid book, but it's not a hard read.
Uh huh.
Nice. And so especially, well, of course, a lot of people are royal watchers and love to read about royalty. But with that new television series, The Crown, it seems like this would be a great accompaniment. If
right.
you look at Queen Elizabeth and Queen Victoria, that sounds like fun to me. Victoria
yes.
by Daisy Goodwin. And Paul, that brings us back to you.
Well, I got interested. I got one of my favorite authors, William Trevor died this last week. And he was 89 and just truly one of the greatest writers of the 20th century. And just sort of broke my heart to lose him. So I picked up Emma Donoghue's, I read a review, a really great review by Stephen King. And the book is called The Wonder, and it takes place about 10 years after the Irish potato famine and very close to the end of the Crimean War. And the circumstance is there's a little town in Ireland, and an 11-year-old girl, everybody claims, has taken in no nourishment in 4 months. Mm. And, of course, they're rooting for miracle status on this. But in comes that they hire a former Florence Nightingale nurse to watch over her to make sure she doesn't take in one bit of food. And the Florence Nightingale nurse, very sort of stuffy English lady who has no use for the Irish usually, but you warm up to her after a while, as she warms up to the girl, to young Anna. And this is based on something that really happened.
Really?
Yes. Okay. A group like 50.
It sounds pretty far-fetched.
But... Yeah. A group of 50, or, I mean, they didn't do it as a group.
Right.
But began starving themselves at this time. And, of course, what we recognize it as is anorexia nervosa. And the characters in it are quite wonderful. Each one has a separate reason for really wanting Anna to be declared a saint. And I'm not going to tell you how it ends, or because it has about halfway through it really kicks in. Mm. And it's a I think it is Emma Donoghue who wrote The Room. I think this is enormously better.
Really?
Than The Room. And it is and it reminded me of William Trevor. You know, it's Irish stuff in the good Irish sense.
In the depressing Irish sense.
No. See, I don't find that stuff depressing. I find that stuff lively.
Okay, The Wonder by Emma Donoghue. And let's see, we're getting to the point where we probably are moving out of fiction, but Jan, I don't know. Let's move on to some nonfiction, and if we still have some fiction picks hanging around, that's okay. Paul and Mary can work them in, but Jan, what's next for you?
Well, I'm going to talk about the book by Arlie Hochschild that's been getting a ton of attention called Strangers in Their Own Land, which is set in western Louisiana. She's a sociologist at Berkeley, and she spent 5 years in western Louisiana interviewing Tea Party people, but she has actually achieved the thing that nobody else seems to be able to do, which is to make them really empathetic. And she sort of happened on this project. She's somebody that's written a lot of award-winning books, most famously, I think, Second Shift, about people that have to work two jobs in America in order to survive. But anyway, she had this student who was from Louisiana and who grew up with liberal parents, but her mother's best friend was a Tea Party person, and the families were completely intermixed. And so the student introduced Arlie Hochschild to her mother and her mother's friends, and through her mother's friends, she had very intimate relationships with these people. And she chose to focus on the environment when she talked to them. And so she writes like a novelist, so it is a little bit, I mean, it's not fiction, although there are scenes in it that are like science fiction when she's talking about some of the, you know, the land degradation through the oil companies. I mean, there are scenes in this book that really are like something Stephen King would write.
So for people who are looking right now to better understand our country and a lot of things that people have been surprised by in the last few months, this sounds like a really good avenue.
It's an excellent book.
All right. Strangers in Their Own Land, Arlie Russell Hochschild.
That's right.
All right. And we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes to get some more picks for the best new books of the year, things that you might want to put on your holiday wish list or buy for someone else in your life. With me this hour, we have Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, and Mary Rourke Watson from Plot Twist Bookstore in Ankeny. And, of course, I know a lot of people are taking notes throughout the hour, but we will also be posting all of these picks on our website later today, iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're talking about the best new books this holiday season. With me, Mary Rourke Watson from Plot Twist Bookstore in Ankeny, Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And Mary, we took the leap into nonfiction. Also, I should remind all of you, since we're about a third of the way through your lists, that we only have one segment of the show left. So now we're going to have to pick up the pace a little bit and talk about these books a little more quickly. But Mary, do you want to dive in with a nonfiction pick?
I am going to choose Upstream by Mary Oliver, who is my favorite of the poets. And the reason I chose her is because I think she is so accessible to people who often shy away from poetry. She has this marvelous relationship with nature, and in fact, I think describes it this way: I cannot be a poet without the natural world. Someone else could, but not me. For me, the door to the woods is the door to the temple. And her poetry and her writing are just incredible. She has an enormous grasp of language and just uses it to find the most interesting connections to the universe through the most simple things in front of her. This is a marvelous gift, I think, for anyone that just enjoys language and is looking for a way to connect with nature and to celebrate words and poetry.
But it's not a collection of poetry. It's a collection of essays?
Yes, but it has poetry in it.
All right, nice.
Yes. Well, all of her poetry books tend to work in some essays, and she calls it poetry, and then she tells stories with her words. So I always think they're always a little mix of both.
Nice. All right. Upstream by Mary Oliver. And Paul, back to you.
Okay. I just remembered I've got another fiction. Can I squeeze it in?
Yes, you can.
Okay. This is Colson Whitehead's book, Underground Railroad, which did win the National Book Award this year, which does not, no disrespect to Paulette Giles, but it is
It's an honor just to be nominated.
Yeah. It's an enormously rich, complex book about American slavery. And he takes a girl named Cora from her time in Africa when she was little, and she was with her grandmother, Mabel, there. And you don't get a lot of slavery books that go back to Africa. And they end up in this country going from owner to owner, as was common. And Cora gets word from another slave, Caesar, that there is an underground railroad. Now, people from Iowa who hear about the underground railroad think about it as white people helping black people. And sort of hiding them in the basement. This is a real railroad. This is an iron horse underground. And it travels around the South and stops in various states. And in every place they stop, they find horribly daunting circumstances. And it is about how everything was sort of, the deck was stacked against people of color. And the writing is just so excellent. He read at not at Prairie Lights, at the Engler. Mm-hmm. And he is an amazing person. I asked him, how come this book wasn't so funny? And he said, you know, slavery. Which I said, oh, yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead, winner of the National Book Award this year.
We have many signed copies.
All right. Good tip. Jan, what do you have next?
Well, I'll go along with the prose by poets here since we started that theme.
All right.
And I have My Lost Poets, A Life in Poetry, the new collection of essays by Philip Levine. And, you know, Philip Levine, we lost him a couple of years ago, and he was, if we're considering him the spokesman of the working class, it's maybe a good time to be reading his poems right now, too. But this collection of essays is really wonderful. And, he grew up in Detroit. He was reading poetry young, in high school. I mean, seeking it out for himself in a way it's kind of amazing to read about. And then, of course, he came to the workshop, and there are, famous stories retold here because he was in the class with Donald Justice that was famously taught both by Robert Lowell and John Berryman. So there are some really wonderful John Berryman anecdotes in this book, and one of which actually doesn't take place in Iowa City, but takes place in L.A., where Henry Coulette, who had been his classmate at Iowa, brought Phil and Berryman out to read in L.A., and Berryman, had to have a martini at 10 in the morning and, continued all day, but then read from the Dream Songs before they'd ever been read before. So that was an amazing essay to read. And he talks about teaching. He talks about, students he had and what that meant to his life. He talks again about the race riots in Detroit and how that affected his poetry in the 60s. Most famously, They Feed, They Lie. It's a really amazing story about his composing that poem in one night in Detroit during the riots. And so it's a great book, and there's a companion volume of posthumous poems.
All right, which Paul brought with him. So this was My Lost Poets, A Life in Poetry by Philip Levine. And Paul, you brought the collection, right? At the bottom of your pile right now.
The Last Shift. He's very working class in many ways, and The Last Shift is such a working class title.
All right, The Last Shift by Philip Levine. And since we moved into poetry, Jan, you brought quite a bit of poetry. So because we're going to run short on time, why don't you just kind of give us a rundown on what you're loving in poetry right now, and then we'll return to nonfiction.
Okay. Well, I brought two collections of poetry by people that are on the Writers' Workshop faculty right now, Jane Mead, who's teaching here this fall, and James Galvin, who's been teaching here since, I believe, 1983. And his new book of poems is called Everything We Always Knew Was True. And this book has been the kind of book that I can show to people that read poetry every day of their lives, and they have to have it, or people that never read poetry and say they don't understand poetry, and they are pierced by some of these poems.
Nice.
Snow is one that if you come into the bookstore, I will show you. And Jane,
you can't get away.
And Jane's book is similarly necessary, I think. These are necessary books. I mean, we're in a time when I think poetry is necessary because, sort of mundane as it might sound, mortality is the place that we all meet.
All and right. And that's World of Made and Unmade,
right? Which
by
is
Jane
a, which is a book length poem about the end of her mother's life, among other things.
It is so beautiful.
It's so beautiful, spare, and so memorable. It's like these images are just etched in your mind,
But it's not a downer.
No.
Absolutely not a downer.
Well, because that's what poetry does. It allows you to face the darkest things and find them transcendent.
And you also brought a collection from our latest Nobel Prize in Literature winner as well, Bob Dylan.
Oh, yes, I did. I brought Bob Dylan's lyrics. And I, of course, have been listening to Bob Dylan since I was 14, and I have no doubt that he should have won the Nobel Prize.
Me neither.
It was the happiest thing
that
happened. I don't
even know why it was an argument.
But this is the complete lyrics from 1961 to 2012, and you know, if you read them, you realize that they are obviously more poems if they're sung, but I love to look at the way that they're written. I mean, his I guess you would say, passion for rhyme, his obsession with rhyme, is, I don't know what to say, remarkable.
Well, it's soft.
It propels. But if you listen to the way that he stresses these things, I mean, if you in your head can remember the songs and listen to the way that he stresses and alludes, that is why they're poetry. And it's interesting to look at the difference.
All right.
Yeah.
So
it's a wonderful
Bob
book.
Dylan, The Lyrics, 1961 through 2012. And since we just spent so much time talking about poetry, Mary, I'm going to give you two picks in a row, but we are running out of time, so they have to be pretty quick here. You've got a bunch of nonfiction picks, and you seem to really love biography.
Right, I do. And so I chose Arnold Palmer, A Life Well Played, My Stories. And this is for people who like golf, but it's also for people who are looking for great insights into the way a man like Arnold Palmer was a businessman and a father and a coworker. He just has wonderful advice and guidance, and he shares stories about his career. And so it's really just this marvelous, not just a here's how I played golf, but more about stories about his father, about the influence that he had on his golf game, the interactions he had with people. They weren't always positive, but how he took those moments and just sort of made them into part of his character, and really get some great insights into how you deal with negativity like that.
And that's autobiography, actually.
Yes. Yeah.
Arnold Palmer, A Life Well Played, My Stories by Arnold Palmer. Right. All right. And what do you have next?
And then I have In Such Good Company. This is by Carol Burnett. It's 11 years of laughter, mayhem, and fun in the sandbox. And it's everything you expect from Carol Burnett. It's she scripts out some of her favorite skits. She has photos. She has backstory. The favorite part of that show I remember is when the audience asked questions from her. So she has those written down, and she talks about, you know, how she answered those. Just great fun with reminding us about how fun that show was and what a gift it was.
All right. In Such Good Company by Carol Burnett. And that's your next pick. So let's move on to you, Paul. You get two, but they have to be fast.
Okay. I want to read a poem from Max Ritvo, who died at 24. And really, this is his only book, and probably will be his only book. And there will be no signed copies, but it is an absolutely lovely book that, like Jane Mead's, deals with death and dying, but from a personal vision. And I just want to read a poem, Afternoon. Okay. When I was about to die, my body lit up like when I leave my house without my wallet. What am I missing, I ask, patting my chest pocket. And I am missing everything living that won't come with me into this sunny afternoon. My body lights up for life like all the wishes being granted in a fountain at the same instant, all the coins burning the fountain dry. And I give my breath to a small bird-shaped pipe. In the distance, behind several voices haggling, I hear a sound like heads clicking together, like a game of pool played with people by machines.
Wow. And that's from his collection, Four Reincarnations.
I don't think I mentioned that.
All right.
And I want to talk about my favorite nonfiction book of the year. It's called 10 Restaurants That Changed America by Paul Friedman, who is a scholar. Who's a historian, but also a foodie. He edits Food Magazine, which is kind of a food history magazine. And he talks about restaurants have not always been with us. And he shows like a hot dog stand, that a drawing from from the Middle Ages. You know, this is what we had. And the first American rich people's restaurant was Delmonico's. And you really couldn't get in there unless you had a lot of money. Diamond Jim Brady used to go there, and you got course after course. And he also talks about chez Panisse and sort of the notion of trendiness. And every restaurant, he gives a social history of the time. And it is just so interesting. Howard Johnson's. I love talk about
so
Howard
not
Johnson's.
Not just the fancy restaurants.
No. And Schraft's, which was the woman's restaurant. You know, they had little petit fours and such like that.
Because women eat tiny food. Yep.
Yep. Yeah.
Especially.
That's what women were supposed to be eating. And it's just such a great history book.
All right, 10 Restaurants That Changed America by Paul Friedman. And, Jan, I think you get the final word today. One last pick for us.
Just one?
Yep.
Okay, well, I was going to talk about Avid Reader by Robert Gottlieb, and I'll just say it because I'm going to then. It's a great book. Come in the store, and I'll tell you about it.
Okay.
And then I just wanted to talk. I wanted to continue on my horse theme and say that Sherry Segerman, my dear friend and the ex-bookkeeper at Prairie Lights, wanted me to recommend for her a book called The Perfect Horse by Elizabeth Letts. And she's the person who wrote $80 Champion. And this book is about General Patton's rescue of the Lipizzano horses from the Viennese Spanish riding school during World War II. And she said it delves into the science of eugenics, the role of the horse during the U.S. military, and the adventurous and dangerous mission to save these horses and the strong bond between humans and horses. She thinks that this is the perfect book for both the history buff and the horse lover, and obviously those things are going to come together a lot in Prairie Lights this season.
Right?
And so if there's someone on your list that loves history and horses,
this is it.
This is it.
The Perfect Horse.
By Elizabeth Letts.
By Elizabeth Letts. All right. Jan Weissmiller, thank you so much. Paul Ingram, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Jan Weissmiller and Paul Ingram of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And Mary Rourke Watson, thank you so much for being here.
Thank
nice
you.
Nice to meet you, Mary.
Yeah,
nice to meet both
store.
Of you.
And do come back again. Mary Rourke Watson of Plot Twist Bookstore in Ankeny. Of course, we will have this list, all these lists, posted on our website by the end of the day today, iowapublicradio.org, so you can work on your own holiday giving and wish list. And be sure to tune in tomorrow. We're going to have picks for the young readers or the young at heart on Talk of Iowa tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Iowa Public Radio.